This is the Be One Change One podcast, where our mission is to help listeners define values, practice integrity, and inspire change.
Our vision is to mentor men and empower them to achieve more by taking responsibility for shaping their own lives.
He's Cass, an evolving man who has been shaped by adversity and continues to grow through his imperfections.
And he's Roscoe, an imperfect work in progress that tries to suck less every day.
Between us, we have over 40 years of Air Force fighter pilot experience with countless hours as trainers, instructors, and mentors.
Join us and learn to take responsibility for your own life as we dive into subjects from leadership to resilience to vulnerability.
Be the one who changes their course. Be decisive, driven, and purposeful. Set the example for others. Lead. We wish we'd had this show when we were younger men.
Be the one.
A little bit of remote ops again, at least for one of us. Kind of cool though. I've never done a podcast on the back porch in the middle of Texas with the pouring down rain. So
yeah,
that's a new one.
That's awesome.
Breaking barriers, man. That's what
there
we do,
go.
Right?
It's all new. All right.
So First Name Friday.
Yep.
This is gonna be December's issue of First Name Friday. We got a couple of good questions. I think we can deep dive into some stuff. And apologies right up front if the sound quality is not awesome or if the mic placement isn't great. I've literally got it sitting in my lap. So if it falls over, then I don't know, you guys can deal with it. But the first question that came up was about social anxiety. And before we deep dive into that, I just want to tell a quick story that, first of all, I'm 47 years old and I still deal with this. So if you're a young person dealing with this, don't feel bad about yourself. Give yourself some grace. I mean, it happens,
yeah.
Right? So last night, the reason that we're in Texas is Katie's cousin is getting married. And this cousin happens to be very close to us. And we think very highly of her and her young man that she chose to run through life with. He's a great person. Love them guys to death, right? So we wouldn't have missed this for the world. Well, these large social events, I know where my happy place is and where it isn't. So I usually prepare pretty well for this mentally, physically. I make sure that I've got the gear that I need in the form of whether it's earplugs or an exit strategy or whatever, right? So last night, we go to the wedding. It's awesome. She's beautiful. And goes to the reception. We ate some really great Texas barbecue, softest brisket I think I might have ever eaten. It was phenomenal. And I know it was just, you know, large batch catering, but it was still really good. Ate way too many jalapenos, so not recommended. But at the end of the dinner, you know, we got up and we gave our toast, and it's a long story, but on her side of the family, there wasn't a lot of people willing to get up and speak on her side of the family. So my father-in-law, Katie's dad, and me at the rehearsal dinner on Friday night, Katie had asked me and him both to, hey, will you get up and just say a few words? Okay, fine. So I went first. I got up there and I made some jokes and I, you know, told some funny stories, whatever. Because I've known Austin, I've known the young man now for, I don't know, 3 years or so. And I took him to Six Flags a few years ago and really interrogated the shit out of him and made sure that he was quality material, you know. So, anyways, that was kind of funny. And then my father-in-law gets up and he tells some stories, and it was really funny. So at the reception, we're doing this again. And I kind of got on to Katie. I was like, man, you told me that we were supposed to do this last night. I specifically asked, is this a wedding thing or a rehearsal dinner thing? And she goes, do it now. Okay, fine. So now I have to double down. I have to come up with new material on the fly. This is all right. I'm pretty good on my feet, but wow, what a challenge, right? So we decided to let the father-in-law go first, and he's a great storyteller. Katie's father-in-law, we need to have him on the show one day. He's got some great stories, and he's very animated, and he's very funny. And so I had to follow him. So I made a big joke out of it. I told some stories. It was really good. Well, then the dancing starts after all that. That's when it got really super loud, and I felt in my pocket, man, shit, I forgot my earplugs. Holy crap. So hashtag mistakes, right? No new lessons. Here we go.
You're old,
so,
man.
I'm sitting here thinking of, I mean, I can wad up some paper towel and stick in my ears. I get noise fatigue really, really bad, man. Like my ears will be ringing for 3 days after something like that. So I go out to the car and I get my flashlight and I'm looking around in the car thinking there's got to be something in here I can use. And then it dawned on me that in my luggage bag in the back, we haven't been taking our luggage in and out wherever we've been going. We've been remote ops now for 3 or 4 days. We've just been taking like little 3 day bags here and there. So I've got my main luggage bag in the back and I go root around in there and I found a pair of cargo shorts that I always keep a pair of earplugs in because you never know where Katie and I are going to end up. We might end up at a bar. Hell, I wear those things in church, man. So yeah. I found my earplugs. I'm happy now, right? Roscoe's in a good spot. So go back in, and within, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes or so, I had found myself kind of backed off into a corner with one of Katie's cousin's husband, Charles, who's a great guy, but he and I were kind of laughing that, hey man, this ain't our thing, right? So we were standing over there in the corner with our arms crossed, just kind of watching the room instead of getting into the pit and going and doing the dancing and you know, the little social butterfly thing. That's Katie's element. That is the opposite of me. I would rather sit back outside. So the message is to the young people about social anxiety. I mean, I still deal with it. My hope is that at some point you'd find your coping mechanism, you would find your way to deal with it. And that's kind of the lead into the First Name Friday was, how do you deal with social anxiety?
Yeah. Well, I think it's important too. Like, so I consider myself a well-adjusted introvert. And yeah. If you don't know what the difference is between an extrovert and an introvert, I'll give you a quick summary from the way I understand it anyways, where, you know, we all have to recharge our batteries after a week of work or whatever. Well, an extrovert recharges by going out and being with people and conversation and or partying or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how they kind of recharge their batteries. Where an introvert recharges their batteries with that kind of alone time, right? That downtime, that quiet space. And that's definitely how I recharge. And one thing I'll point out to people is, especially if you're an introvert, like that can be misunderstood, especially if you have extroverted friends in your circle of friends.
Yes.
And so I can remember when I was a commander, I was at a commander's function one time. It was all the squadron commanders were there for the ops group. And we were talking, and you know, every once in a while, usually once a month, one of the commanders was having, like, you know, a commander party at their house or whatever. And I just told him, I said, hey guys, you need to understand this about me. I'm not going to go to many of these. And it's not because I don't like you guys.
Yeah.
But by Friday night, I am so exhausted from the week that I just had that I don't have the energy to go outside and socialize and have small talk, or to go over to your house and talk more about work for 3 hours. Like, I just want to go home, take a shower, and sit on the couch with my wife and watch a movie, you know? So, you know, maybe be open and honest about those types of things. If you know that you're an introvert with your extroverted friends, so they don't take it the wrong way. I still bump into that today. I had an issue come up just a couple weeks ago where somebody completely misconstrued me needing time by myself and not reaching out to them as me not liking them for some reason. Even though my whole pattern of behavior with them has been nothing but kind and supportive and friendly and all those things, right? So you just got to be careful with that stuff. The other thing I'll mention about social anxiety is there's a lot of literature on this now, and I don't want to get into the weeds on all the literature because, one, I'm not a professional. I just ask my wife all these questions because she is. But like social anxiety is a big thing, especially coming out of COVID. We were also isolated for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And especially with the younger generation, they've noticed because of that isolation, and especially if you were an extrovert, like if you were an introvert during COVID, you were happy as could be. That said, reintegrating after, you know, a year and a half of being stuck in your house or whatever made it hard for introverts. And then extroverts were going out of their mind being stuck at home. So, my point in saying all that is, like, social anxiety is an actual, like, disorder that can happen with folks. And so if you have, like, crippling social anxiety, I would just encourage you to reach out to a mental health specialist because they can help you develop the appropriate coping skills and mechanisms.
Do you think there's a difference between, like, and dude, I don't know the clinical definitions of any of this shit. I'm not a professional at any of this stuff, but do you think there's a difference between what we would call social anxiety versus shyness, or maybe just not liking crowds, you know?
I think it might present itself in similar ways, but I think that there's definitely a distinction there from somebody who's just maybe a little shy versus somebody who has like legitimate social anxiety, you know, that like has a physical reaction in their body in crowds or, and sometimes that stuff can be trauma based on things that happened when you were a kid or, I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes into it and I'm not qualified to talk to any of that.
Yeah.
But I think for our discussion, we'll just keep it on, you know, it's not like the type of social anxiety that's crippling.
Yeah.
Because if it is,
but you're not having some kind of visceral reaction to.
Yeah. You're not having some kind of visceral reaction.
You know, you're not shutting down. You're not going into convulsions. You know, you're not like wigging out on the side or anything. You're just shy and you want to kind of be in the corner. And maybe you're not comfortable introducing yourself to new people and starting a conversation or something like that. Does that kind of check?
Yeah. Yeah. That checks totally for me. And so, you know, one of the things that you can do is, you know, just think about what you're going to do. And if you're starting to get anxiety around that, you know, maybe just start small, you know, start by going out with a small group of friends that you can trust, that, you know, that you trust and you get along with, and you already have those relationships established, you know, versus going out in some large group where you're kind of one of many and you don't know a lot of people that could cause you social anxiety, you know, just kind of branch out. But at the same time, don't be afraid to get out of your comfort zone a little bit too and kind of push those boundaries. Because I think for most people, when it comes to like the shyness piece of it or that social anxiety around going out with people that they don't know, it's probably to a certain extent a fear of being judged or even going back to the shame episode, right? There may be some kind of unwanted identity that's tied up in, you know, are people going to think I'm funny or are people going to think I'm stupid or am I going to say the right thing? You know, am I going to make a fool of myself? It's all that kind of stuff, right? And
Caleb brought his girlfriend down from Ember Riddle a couple weekends ago. They were going to celebrate Caleb's birthday there at the house. And she's like, I asked Caleb, how did you guys meet? He goes, we met in the most Gen Z way ever. I guess they were all on their hallway or something in their dorm. They were all required to post their Snapchat handles on their doors. And I don't know if it was him or her. I forget that detail, but they went up and down the hallway just Snapchatting all the people. Hey, I'm so-and-so, you know, whatever. And so he and this girl started a Snapchat conversation back and forth. And eventually after a week or so that led to meeting in the chow hall, you know, and I just think that's hilarious, you know, and it's kind of a testament to the new generation, you know, but she came down and she's one of these people. I don't know that I would say social anxiety. I think that she's just really, really shy and bashful. You know, she, some of her mannerisms, she reminds me of just somebody who's very bashful. And, you know, I made it a point to sit her down and just talk to her and try to make her comfortable and everything. But I noticed that during the party, she kind of eased off and she ended up spending a lot of time in a bedroom by herself. And Katie kind of took the lead on it and went and got her, you know, got her out, introduced her to another female that was there. And they ended up kind of talking. And Caleb is the opposite of this girl. Right. He is.
Right.
He's like Katie. He's bouncing around and he's having a great time and he's talking to all the guys and the girls and everything. And so I wonder, you know, it makes me wonder how two people like that, how do you develop into being able to tolerate to a degree? Because like, I mean, and it goes both ways, right? Like Katie has to tolerate me. Maybe tolerate is not the right word, but it's the word I'm choosing. She has to tolerate me. When we go to a place like that, she knows that I'm probably going to sit in the corner. At 11 o'clock last night, they're still partying out here at the pavilion at her uncle's house. And I was like, this is too much for me. There's too many conversations going on. It's too loud. The music's loud. I'm just overwhelmed. And I went to bed at 11 o'clock last night. Like you, I just needed some quiet time. Versus me having to tolerate Katie and knowing that there's not a party that woman hasn't shut down. She's going to stay there. And that's her element. She loves it. And you know, and so I think that goes both ways a little bit.
Yeah, I think it does too. And you know, how do you make those things work in a relationship? You just find the balance in it, you know?
A little patience maybe.
Yeah. And just some understanding of what the needs are and making sure that you can kind of balance that between the two, you know? So if you're an introvert with an extrovert, go out on Friday night and maybe Saturday night's in, and then you both get a little bit of what you need
for the
recharge, or vice versa. You know, balance. there's Yeah, there's ways to find, I think, balance in that. It's easy for me because Alicia and I are both, she's even more of an introvert than I am. So,
you know, at that wedding ceremony last night, the preacher said something interesting. And he said, you know, he was given the vows and whatnot. And one of the lines, a few of them, but one of them stood out to me. And he said something to the effect of, I promise to love you for who you are and not who I want you to be. And I thought that was pretty good, man. As at a foundation level in a relationship, whether it's a, you know, maybe it's a friend or a coworker or your significant other, you know, you kind of have to let them be them to a degree. Now we've already highlighted in a relationship, there's got to be some compromise in there, but I think for the most part, I got to let Katie be Katie.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that becomes a little more evident the older you get to a certain extent too, because you also realize that you need that freedom to kind of do your thing at times. And again, it's just striking that balance between it. And that can be really challenging sometimes too, finding balance in all of that. But that's more of a discussion, I think, for us to have at some point, especially if we bring the girls on and just do a conversation around relationships.
Yeah, that'd be really good.
So,
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to get into maybe some coping mechanism stuff. So you take it. Go.
Go ahead. Yeah, I was just going to say the other thing you can do is just try to stay in the moment. You know, if you're instead of letting that loop play in your mind about, you know, am I going to say something stupid? Am I going to look stupid? Try to flush all that if you can, and just try to be in the moment and try to have fun with what's going on and, you know, pay attention to the conversations around you, you know, laugh, enjoy it, reach out to somebody that, you know, maybe you can talk to and make a new friend or whatever the case may be based on the situation. But I think sometimes we just have to force ourselves to quiet our minds a little bit, kind of push Stan that you like, you know, your Stan.
Yeah,
that negative voice in your head to the background and try to focus on just, you know, having a positive outcome and just staying in the moment and enjoying the moment that you're in with the people that you're around or the whatever you're doing. Right. And some of that, too, is balance and knowing what you want. Right. So if you don't like big crowds, well, maybe the best thing to do is to go on a hike with a few people where, you know, it's going to be a little quieter. You know, the conversation is going to be a little more limited depending on what kind of hike it is, you know, if it's kind of a narrow trail or something like that versus going to a concert or something like that, you know, and jumping off the diving board into the deep end. So there's some ways that you can manage that for yourself as well. But yeah, just try to stay in the moment and try not to concern yourself too much with those. And then guess what, dude, if you do say something stupid, welcome to the club. We've all been there, you know,
laugh it off. You know, I say dumb shit every day, man.
I can attest to that. Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, who cares, you know, and who cares what other people think to a certain extent, you know, especially if you don't know them, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice to make a first impression, but you don't always get it right.
Yeah. Well, almost 100% of the time I don't get it right, but that's not to say I don't try, and I try to get better, and I've learned a little bit more as time goes on when to just smile and shut up and shake a hand and introduce myself and then walk away and that kind of stuff. But you were talking about, you know, the social dynamics and being in that social atmosphere. And one of the things that I was going to say was maybe pick one person and have a conversation with that one person. You know, if you can start a conversation with one person, maybe that person's going through the same thing, and maybe you just help them out and y'all can stand off to the side in the corner like I did with Charles last night, and you're still enjoying everything. You're still part of the party. You're, I don't know, at least externally enjoying yourself a little bit.
Yeah.
But you can find somebody else to kind of share in that atmosphere with you a little.
Yeah, I think that's important. And I think what you did last night was you just took the space you needed.
Well, yeah, you know? I had to take my time out. I know myself, though.
But to the same extent, I would say that by stepping back, you were able to kind of stay in the moment, right? So you're in the background, 100%. But you're watching all the fun go down. You're seeing the bride and how happy she is and the family and how happy they are. And Katie out there tearing up rug. And, you know, and that's fun, too, right? You don't necessarily have to be out there doing the same thing to enjoy it. You know what I mean?
No, and I've found, you know, and this is because I've just got some years on me, but, and I've done this a lot, is I find happiness in watching other people play and have fun. When I'm watching Katie work the room the way that she does, and when I'm watching the kids on the dance floor and, you know, those kinds of things, I sit back and I smile and I watch and I love to people watch. You know, when I go to an airport, yeah, I'll sit there and just people watch all day.
Yeah. Well, I think that part of that is just staying in the moment, man, and just kind of enjoying the environment around you and taking what you can from it and having fun. So
I did read a couple of things. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to kind of step it to the next level and just say, I did read a couple of things on this about if you find this is kind of paralyzing to you, and versus just not liking crowds, I think there may be a difference. Like if you go into panic attacks, when you go into a situation like this, it may be time to seek out somebody professional to talk to.
Yeah, definitely.
There's no shame in talking to somebody. The rain just picked up here, so let me know if the background noise gets unbearable. Yeah, there's no shame in talking to somebody professionally about some of this stuff, and maybe they can help you work through some of it. And I read about this cognitive behavior therapy. I'm sure that you and Alicia talk about this stuff as part of her work.
Yeah, she's trained in CBT.
Yeah, putting yourself into kind of these mock-ups, if you will, you know, these little practice scenarios to help you work through some of that stuff. And I think there's some great benefit in that, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, role playing is a great way to do it because it's like chair flying, man. If you think about and you practice the situation that you're going to be in,
yeah,
then when you're in that situation, like the anxiety's a little less overwhelming, right? Because you've already kind of got an idea of what your response may be or how you're going to handle that situation, and so those are very valuable tools, and that's exactly what, you know, a qualified therapist can do that's trained in CBT to help you through some of those things. And I just want to piggyback on what you said. Like there's nothing wrong with seeking help or treatment, especially in lieu of, you know, the environment that we just came out of with COVID and how isolated we all were. Like there's a lot of habits that people built over that year and a half that they didn't have before, but because they were isolated, became habits for them.
Yeah.
And breaking out of that stuff can be really difficult sometimes. So kind of like you said at the beginning, man, just be patient with yourself. And if you realize that that stuff is really kind of overwhelming, then yeah, it's probably time to seek a professional's help around it. Cause they can definitely help you build some coping mechanisms and some skills and some tools to manage those situations.
Even those people who are outgoing, COVID affected those guys. I mean, it's two sides of the same coin, you know. For the introverts, it probably put them even further down in that hole, or at least made it more difficult for them to get out, made it a challenge for them. But for the guys who are very comfortable, you know, like for example, in my job, the pilots come in for the simulator and we stand up, we shake hands. Hey man, how you doing? Hadn't seen you in a while, whatever. We do a quick little briefing and we get in. Well, when that handshake was taken away from us, and we couldn't see each other smiling and have those pleasantries with each other. And just that real quick, you know, I don't know, confirmation of brotherhood, if you will. That was a thing, man, for a long time. And I mean, I used to walk up and down the hallways just randomly high-fiving people. And I had to stop doing that. And, I think everybody kind of dealt with it in their own way. We're finally here. What are we, three, almost 4 years post-COVID? So I'm probably going to get some shade by saying this, but at some point we have to stop using COVID as an excuse for everything that's going on in society and the world.
Yeah, for sure.
We got to move past that shit, y'all. And I mean, something that happened 4 years ago, if you're still letting that define your life, man, dude, we need to break forward. We need to get on with things.
Yeah. Well, that's the point, right? Don't allow those. Right. Where we want the ones to get is where you're not sitting there making excuses for things that have happened in the past for driving the decisions that you're making now in your life. Right.
Exactly.
So let's not make COVID an excuse anymore. Yeah. Let's have responsibility for our actions. Let's move out. Let's move forward and get better.
No, little by little, there's no doubt that the COVID and all the fallout around it definitely impacted things. on a lot of spectrums, on a lot of levels. I mean, everything from brick and mortar businesses to what we're talking about today. But I mean, gosh, man, that was so long ago. It was so long ago. Yeah. At some point, we have to take responsibility for ourselves and go, you know what? I'm not going to let that define me anymore. And I'm going to do me, and I'm going to try to make myself better. And one of the things that I had written down for the social anxiety conversation was the mind, body, soul balance, man. Focus on you and make yourself the best version of you that you can. And it's not going to be for everybody. And I say this to people all the time. I'm not for everybody. And I recognize that. And maybe this will be a good segue into the next topic that we get into here in just a minute. But you know what? If it ain't for you, bye, Felicia. I'm going to do me, man.
Yeah. Yeah, just remember baby steps too, man. I like just bite things off in small chunks and just try to get a little better. Don't try to do too much too fast. I think fundamentally, talking to Alicia about this a little bit, people that deal with this on a bigger scale, it typically ties back to some kind of negative core belief that they have about themselves.
You're probably right, yeah.
You know, like they're not smart or they're not good around people or, you know, they're going to make fools of, like, just all the things I've already said. They're going to make a fool out of themselves. And guess what? We all have those negative core beliefs. We all have those unwanted identities that we don't want to have the world believe about us. And so, you know, understanding what some of those may be for you may allow you to kind of move through and navigate that to a certain extent a little better. By just starting small, right? And building small victories around those social situations where you get more and more comfortable in them.
Yeah. And you know, you just hit the nail on the head right there with the small victories, man. And I preach that to everybody that I coach. Hey man, just get something small, win something small, win getting to the first evolution, whether that's breakfast or getting to work. You know, if you can just start bagging a couple of wins, you start to create a little momentum. And when you get momentum, it makes you want to win a little bit more. And when you want to win a little bit more, you start to put in a little bit more effort to it. And, you know, there's a lot of different things you can try, a lot of different techniques. The CBT, I mean, that's not the CBT that the younger generation is probably thinking of. That's cognitive behavior therapy.
Yeah.
But, you know, another thing is something that can help you if you're an anxious person in social settings and that fear of judgment and everything is something as simple as practicing public speaking can help you break down some of those barriers and getting comfortable talking. Like I was, when I got up the last couple of days, I got up and gave the little toast for the wedding, the rehearsal dinner, and then the wedding at the reception. And I was sitting out back talking to Katie's uncle last night before everybody showed up back over here at the house. And he said, man, you're a really good public speaker. I said, oh, thank you very much. And he started asking me questions about, you know, do you get nervous? Do you know all this? Cause I'm just making this shit up on the fly, right? Just getting up there and I don't know, trying to be funny and tie it all back to something tangible. And it's because I've had a lot of practice at it. I think maybe naturally I'm just, I don't know, more comfortable doing that. And that's kind of innate to my character, but that doesn't come without a lot of practice, like getting up and giving a briefing in a flight room. Like you know, a single seat guy, you're briefing one or three guys. You know, I'm in a Strike Eagle four ship and there's eight dudes in the room, you know, and so it can be a little daunting. And every one of them's just drilling holes in you with their eyes and hanging on every word. So you kind of just develop that comfort of standing in front of people and talking. And if you're an anxious kind of person and you don't like social settings, maybe you can try something like that. You know, join your local Toastmasters or go to some, you know, join a club to where you guys give presentations to each other or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And then the last thing that I would say is just don't play the comparison game. It's like we talked about in the shame episode, right? So some of this is a little self-inspection, understanding who you are, what you're about, and then coming to grips with that and knowing what you're good with and what you're not, and then working on the things maybe that you're not or trying to get a little better at them. But don't play the comparison, right? Because the comparison game is going to lead to that shame. It's going to lead to that disconnection. It's going to lead to that pull away that we don't want to have and that we're trying to fight and counter with these social anxiety issues. So focus on you. Don't sit there and go, oh, well, I wish I was like so-and-so because they're so good with crowds and they're so good with talking to people. And they're probably an extrovert and you're an introvert and that's okay. It is hard, but don't play the comparison game with yourself. It's just not fair.
That's tough, especially when you're a young person and you want to fit in. You know, you want that positive confirmation from people that you're part of the group. And I think that's really difficult, man. And you know, you and I are sitting here on the other side of it as, you know, almost 50 years old. And
yeah,
you know, with time and maturity and a little confidence building, we've been able to now we can look back and we can give some of this advice. But if you're in it, man, if you're in the shit right now, yeah, I can see where that's pretty difficult. There are ways that you can work on it. And with time, you'll gain more confidence in yourself and your abilities. And hopefully that'll lead to you being able to confidently project your personality, and people are going to soak it up or they're not. And you just kind of say, okay, and you move on.
Yeah. Well, I think, and again, the important piece of that is we're hardwired for connection. So don't allow yourself to disconnect from friends and social environments. Just find ways to work through it. Right. Yeah. And like we said, find the small victories, build on it a little bit each time and get a little better at it, get a little more comfortable at it, stay connected. That's what's important.
By the way, I just want to throw this out there, man. I'm really enjoying sitting outside, having a cup of coffee, doing this, because I would be doing exactly this if I wasn't recording something. I'd be sitting outside having a cup of coffee, probably talking to Katie's uncle right now and just telling stories. So this is, this is neat. We need to do more of this. Just pick a random spot. If we can find a Wi-Fi connection outside and just sit and do this, this is pretty epic, man. I'm actually really enjoying this.
Right on.
Right on, man. So anything else on social anxiety?
No.
Cool, dude. Well, the second question we got for the First Name Friday was really simply, how do you deal with people you don't like? Now, you can talk about this broadly. You can talk about this professionally or personally. I think you can, you know, there's maybe different levels or layers to it. But in general, how do you deal with people you don't like?
Man, that's tough, because if you know, you can go online or whatever and you can look at all these different things that say, oh, this is how, especially professionally, right? There's a bunch of stuff out there about, oh, this is how you know, work with somebody who professionally you don't like.
Yeah.
Who knows what actually is going to work? I mean, I think a lot of it just is scenario dependent and environment dependent. I will tell you that I was not always very good at working with people that I didn't like.
Same.
You know, I definitely made some mistakes in that area. I can think of a couple of times in the squadron, especially when I was younger, where guys that kind of came across as bullies to me, I don't like bullies, kind of came across as bullies to me, or just, I don't know, jokers that were lackadaisical and, you know, would pull pranks on people all the time, but then get super offended if anybody ever did anything to them. I would shut those
dish it
people
out,
down.
Not taking like, any kind of people. Yeah.
Yeah, man, I would shut those people down. And especially as I got, you know, kind of more and more respect in the squadron as, you know, an IP or as a weapons officer, I would go after those people sometimes because I can't fucking stand it, right? It drives me up a wall. And that probably wasn't the best approach sometimes. You know, I mean, I think that there is, especially if you're in a position of authority, there's a point in time to call somebody aside and have a conversation with them. I'll tell you about one time I did handle it well. And it wasn't really somebody that I didn't like, but there was a guy that I was an assistant director of operations for the DO in one of the squadrons at Shaw, and he fleeted up to command one of the other squadrons. And I was a weapons officer at the time. And I was the chief of stand eval at the group. And he got this fiery young new patch full of piss and vinegar in his squadron. And this guy was just not going about things the right way. The thing about being a patch, especially when you're a captain, is you kind of live in a weird world. Because you're at the bro level, you know, you're a captain, you're a young captain, you know, you're kind of in that grouping with the captains and the lieutenants.
But you have a different level of responsibility.
But you have a different, but you also operate very much at the higher level with the majors and the lieutenant colonels and the leadership in the squadron, right? And so you have to play this kind of delicate dance between staying connected at the bro level network, but then also understanding what like leadership's trying to accomplish and kind of backing them up when you're, when you need to, and, or providing voice to their message when you need to the bro level, when maybe that message isn't coming across correctly. Anyways, long story short, this particular dude was like, just, I don't know. I think he was just going a little wild dingo, and, he was kind of bad mouthing the commander and the DO. Long story short, they're at a red flag at Nellis and they're playing crud or something. And he bows up and like wants to get into a fist fight with a commander. And he's probably drunk, right?
Yeah.
So my buddy walks away, wakes him up at 7 o'clock in the morning, the next morning, makes him go for like a 5 mile run.
Nice.
And tries to have a conversation with him. They get back and he calls me and he goes, hey, Cass, I need you to talk to this guy for me. So I call him in. He comes up to my office at the group and I sit him down and I don't really know this cat very well. He's not somebody that I had known from a previous squad or anything. And I just was like, you know, hey, man, we just need to have a conversation. I go, I don't think you understand what your role is as a patch.
Yeah.
You know, and we had probably an hour and a half conversation where I just kind of broke it down for him. And he, you know, it wasn't, he was just kind of, they don't teach you at weapon school where you fit. They just teach you how to kill shit and teach, you
That's
know,
tough, man.
And, boy, he turned it around though. He did a great job. You know, he reached back to me. I saw him like a couple years later and he came up to me and he thanked me for that conversation. Cause it kind of turned him around from a leadership perspective. So that was one time when I handled it well. So what does that mean? Well, I think one of the things that you can do if you have are having a problem with somebody, especially like in a professional environment, is, you know, talk to somebody who's maybe been in the business for a while, or, you know, if you've got a mentor that's maybe dealt with some situations like that, get some advice from them.
Yeah.
And go, hey, here's what's going on for me at work with this guy. Do you have any recommendations? Like, how should I approach this situation? You know, or if you have a trusted agent, maybe have them have a conversation with that guy like I did in that situation, right? Because it may be nothing less than just a complete misunderstanding or lack of kind of capturing.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't realize how much influence he had in the squadron, you know, which I get, because you come out of weapons school with your fucking, you just got your dick kicked in for 6 months. You think you're a bag of shit. Because you know, you're busting rides all the time and all you get told is how awful you are at everything, you know, and then you get to the squadron and you're like, Jesus, I suck, you know?
Yeah.
I'll never forget that, man. It was like my second month back from weapon school. I'm teaching and we're doing like I was doing like an IP4VX or something. And like, there's a 3-group presentation and like everybody's freaking out. And I'm just sitting here going, like 2 months ago, dude, I was doing with 5-group pictures.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like the 3-group thing so easy. Now I just didn't realize how big my essay bubble had grown. You know?
Yeah.
So anyways, one way you can approach it.
That's just a matter of perspective though. You know, your perspective coming out of weapons school was vastly different than the rest of the squadron, because you had been pushing so hard for so long that became your normal. And then you came back and you kind of went, whoa, man, the meter isn't fully pegged here.
No.
So
that's it.
Yeah.
It's but exposure.
That's, part you're of the exposed to so of much that's more designed to do, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. One of the things that I kind of jotted down in my notes is, you know, I'm big on the individual, and you are responsible for your actions. And I think when it comes to dealing with people that you don't like, you have to realize that you are responsible for your responses and your reactions to things. And, you know, I'm guilty of it as anybody else, of just either an outward projection or some kind of subterfuge on people that I don't like. I tend to wear it on my face a lot, and I try to get better and I try to be more tolerant to those people. But we've all been in situations where the conversation is just either boring or this guy's a dumbass or something like that. And sometimes avoidance is maybe the best option. Get up and remove yourself from the situation. Or if you're forced to work in an environment with people that you don't like, take a break, walk around, go get some exercise, get some fresh air, you know, put a smile on your face, because that's all shit that you can control. And if he's a dude that's grumpy and trying to spread negative energy around the workplace, you know, maybe avoid him. Maybe stay away from those kind of people.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe you can't, right? Maybe it's your boss. Maybe mm-hmm. there's no way to avoid that situation. But I think the key to what you're talking about, dude, is try not to be reactive, right? So yeah. In a conversation with them or in a meeting with them or whatever, try not to let them get under your skin and become reactive to it.
Yeah.
You know, keep your cool, stay calm, cool, and collected. You know, and then try to find ways to communicate effectively with them. That may be difficult to do. And it may take a bunch of different attempts to kind of figure out the best way to do it. But one of the yeah. things that you can do, and this is true in relationships too, is if you're talking to somebody who you're having an issue with, is try to use I statements, not you statements. So instead yeah, of just good. Sitting there and going, well, you know, Roscoe, when you do X, Y, and Z,
yeah.
You know, exactly. Because if you lead with a you statement, you're there. Somebody like that, especially if they're a douchebag, they're automatically going to become defensive.
Yep. They're going on defense and then they're going to project it back to you. Yeah.
Right. So, and they're not going to hear anything you're saying because their brain's immediately going to switch to defense. Right. So if you steer away from the you statements and you focus on the I statements, which is, hey, you know, what I need from the situation is this. In order for me to do what I need to do, I need this. Right. Yeah. That deflects that putting them on the defensive mode. And that may be something that you can try maybe to get more information or maybe to get what you need from your boss or whatever, the support that you need in order to try and accomplish what they're asking you to do. That's something you can try.
Yeah. And I had that jotted down too, is try to avoid ad hominem attacks. You know, not everybody is, you know, not every teammate is going to get along with every teammate. And that's true at just about any level. I mean, look at the great sports teams over the decades here and Michael Jordan and all the success that the Bulls had. There was some friction on some of those teams. Like some of those personalities just didn't mesh, and that's okay. Yeah. At the end of the day, they all realize though that they're there to do a job, and that job is to win a trophy, and they each executed their role at a high level. Now they may not be high-fiving each other in the locker room. Okay. They knew when to turn it on and when to turn it off. But when those cats hit the floor, man, they were there to play ball, and that's all they focused on. Yep. So, you know, take it back to your professional environment. And I was going to say, try to avoid ad hominem attacks and keep it professional. You're there to execute a role on the team, execute that role at a high level. Whether you like the guy or not, you can still do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think what that really gets to is trying to find common ground, right? And that may be hard to do at first because that person may not be super approachable or maybe yeah. really good at explaining things. Or they might just be kind of clueless to what the impact of their words or their actions are to the larger group. Or they may not just fucking care too, right? Who knows?
I see that. I see that almost every day.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
there's a guy. I know a guy that has had it highlighted to him several times that he is a cog. Like he is bogging down the machine with his attitude and the way that he conducts himself around the workplace. And he just doesn't care. He's there to do him and doesn't really care how that affects the rest of the team. But at the end of the day, man, that's a him problem, not a you problem, you know? And yeah. how you deal with that is keep it professional. When it's time for you two to interact on a project or whatever it is, when it's time for you guys to be in close proximity to each other, keep professional and work to the other side. And when that's done, he's going to go his way and you're going to go your way. And guess what, man?
Yeah.
I think that, you know, when you're in a leadership position and you're looking down and you're seeing some of these things, like you've been in meetings, you've no doubt you've chaired meetings where two guys sitting across the table get to go and edit with each other
yep.
about something. They're arguing about something, whether it's the best way to do something or some kind of product we need or whatever it is. And, you know, as a leader, you kind of let that go to a degree, but maybe it's on you to stop it and kind of, all right, guys, let's calm down. Let's just solve the problem and move on. But those negative energy type people, as a leader, you pick up on that and you know that, you know, this guy, he doesn't fit in on some of these levels. So when it comes time to be selected for these elite level teams and these guy and these project officers and these higher level projects that we get thrown into, that guy's not going to get picked because they know the guy who's in charge of picking the team, he knows that nobody's going to follow this dude if we put him out front.
Yeah. I can give you two really good examples on the finding common ground. And I think one way that you do that too is by having, try to have a conversation with those people and get a little more understanding as to exactly what they're getting at, you know, or maybe what they need. And kind of try to approach that with a little bit of empathy and compassion for maybe the situation they're in or the lens that they're viewing it through. When I was a brand new patch in the 62nd, we were changing a bunch of the tactics, right? And I had a lieutenant colonel reservist in the squadron who had 2,500 hours in the F-16, and we were switching to a different type of defensive BFM game plan, and he wasn't going to teach it. He flat out came up to me and he goes, "I'm not teaching that." And I was like, okay. So I had two options, right? I've got this guy who is sitting in my academics with his shoulder, with his arms crossed, shaking his head the entire time, and then comes up to me afterwards and goes, "I'm not teaching that." Well, I can do two things, right? I can try to find out what's going on for him and why he doesn't think it's a valid game plan. Or I can just make him be red air for the phase and not let him teach.
Yeah.
And so I went to the DO and I go, "Hey, can I get two CT lines for tomorrow and go to BFM with this guy?" And he's like, "What's going on?" And I tell him the story. Long story short, I go up, I get two CT lines. I tell this guy, I find him in the squadron, and I go, "Hey, look, tomorrow I'm going to brief you the game plan. We're going to go out and fly it. I'll be on defense. You'll be on offense. You can show me what, why you think that this won't work. And then we'll have a conversation around it in the debrief," right? I could have been a dick about it and just gone, "You know what? Fuck him. He's going to fly red air. He's not going to teach any of the students in the course when we're in the defensive BFM phase." And I could have just pigeonholed him to the side and not dealt with it, right? But I decided to go ahead and see, well, what's the deal here? Well, what I realized in the brief and then in the subsequent execution was the reason that he thought this game plan was invalid was because nobody had ever flown it correctly against him. Mm. So, you know, we did radius defense, and what would happen was guys would over rotate their lift vector to go downhill, and but then they would let more than 3,000 feet of vertical turning room build in the vertical. And so he'd just stay up high, wait for the turning room to build, pitch in, and start gunning guys, right?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't let him do that. And next thing you know, we're down at the floor, and he's eventually going to get to an offensive cue on me because he's at a position of advantage. But we're going to get two sets with all the gas it's going to cost him, you know? And so we go up there, we fly it. I was very professional in the debrief. I'm like, "Do you see now, man? You're a fucking idiot. This is why, you know, nobody knew how to fly it against you, blah, blah."
Yeah.
I could have been a dick about it, right? But I wasn't. And we get done with the debrief. He didn't say a whole lot to me. And we get done with the debrief. And I'm like, "Dude, this is why I need you to teach this. And here's all the reasons behind it," which I can't go into because they're classified. But I'm like, "Do you have any questions?" And he kind of looks at me for a second and he goes, "Nope." And I go, "Are you comfortable teaching it now?" And he goes, "Yeah, I'll teach it." And that was it.
Yeah. Well, it was a perception error on his part. He
hadn't been shown the correct
picture. So he had a bad perception of what it was supposed to look like.
Right. And I could have approached it and just been a dick and been like, "Well, fuck you," and pushed him off to the side for the phase, you know, but instead of doing that, I took the time to figure out, well, why does he think this is not a valid game plan? And then I figured it out.
Well, that's a good testament to, I mean, not only changing a person's perception, but go back a few episodes where we were talking about your team is only as strong as the weakest link. And had you kicked that guy to the curb and had him fly the direct support lines for, you know, the next month or the next phase or whatever, well, he's not learning and he's not getting to the same level that everybody else is. So when it comes go time and the flag goes up, well, that guy's not going to be at the front of the pack, you know? So you,
Yeah.
And I mean, there's two levels to what you were just talking about. Yeah. You changed the guy's perception and maybe the people didn't like him and maybe you can move past that. But at the same time, you're making the team better by having patience with that guy.
Well, and what it was really about at the end of the day was building trust, right? Because it wasn't just about building trust with him that I knew what I was talking about and that there was a misperception on his part because nobody had executed it against him properly in the past. And then being patient and showing him and taking the time and the lines and all the effort behind it to provide some instruction on it. But dude, when I did that with him, like, so if I would have pushed him to the curb, every other thing that we were changing in the air-to-air game plans and all that stuff, guess what? Every phase, he'd have been there with his arms crossed going, this dude's full of shit and I'm not going to do any of this bullshit. I know what I've been doing this for 2,500 hours. I know what I'm doing, you know, and now I've got a one out IP or he starts turning other, right? That could have manifested into something, especially amongst the reservists in the squadron that could have become very ugly. But because I took that time, like he was one of my best IPs, you know, he was eating up all the stuff that I was teaching on all the other things because I had established that trust with him. And guess what? I'm sure there were conversations that he had with other older guys in the squadron, especially in the reservist camp, who may have been like, what are we doing? Why are we changing this? And he was probably like, okay, well, yeah, you know, blah, blah, blah. You can trust Cass, right? So
yeah,
it has a much broader impact than you think sometimes.
There you go with all that value speak again. Holy crap, man.
Yeah.
It's funny how this stuff ties together, isn't it?
Yep.
Well, okay. So let's flip the script a little bit. And, you know, there are going to be people on your team, in your workplace, in your social circles that you don't mesh with, that maybe you don't like. But what if you're the person that's not liked? Two sides of the same coin, right? So I don't know. I was just sitting here kind of thinking like, I mean, because I've started both of those shows before, you know, and like I said before, man, Roscoe ain't for everybody. Well, what if you're that guy? What if you're the dude at the party that nobody likes? Some things that you could do is, first of all, ask yourself maybe why. Do some introspection that we've talked about. You know, go down some of those roads. And, I don't know, try to put out positive energy. That's probably the simplest thing that you can do. Like, one of the things that it's become kind of a pet peeve of mine is people walking around with this scowl on their face. And trust me, dude, I was that guy for a long time. I actually had a guy in my workplace in one of my fighter squadrons come up to me and say, hey, man, do your kids scowl all the time? Because you just have this angry look on your face all the time. And it wasn't angry. It was just my body language, the way that I carried myself day to day. Maybe I was concentrating on something or I don't know, whatever it was. But that's kind of become a pet peeve of mine because I've learned through a lot of, I don't know, trial and error, probably screwing it up more than anything. It's easier to put out positive energy than it is to put out negative energy. It's so much easier to smile than it is to frown.
Yeah, dude, here's the bottom line. And I learned this very young when I was in politics. And the bottom line of it all is it's all about building relationships. So if you don't have an ability to build rapport with people, you're not going to get very far. You've got to build relationships. Yeah. You have to build trust. We've talked about this before. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, you have to build. And you can do that by being polite and respectful, right? So even if you have a douchebag for a boss, you know, if you're the kind of cat who, after the meeting's over, goes over to the, you know, the coffee machine and circles up with three or four people and starts bad-mouthing him behind his back, guess what? You're not helping the situation.
Yeah.
You're not going to it's not going to improve. You're not going to further that scenario or that environment at all. So, you know, you've got to try to handle situations, I think, with a certain amount of grace and poise. And when you do that, and if you know your value system and you walk in that integrity, then people are going to see you as a person of integrity.
Yeah.
You know, but they're not if you're the guy that's sitting there backstabbing the guy after the meeting's over or making fun of people or playing the Joker or whatever the case is, right? So I think there's a balance to walk there. And guess what, Roscoe? It is a lot of trial and error. And guess what? You may do a bunch of shit and the dude doesn't fucking change and he's still an asshole. And when that happens, your only course of action is to focus on you, I think, and to do the best work that you can do and try to make the environment for the folks that you're around, the team that you're on or the team that you're in charge of, as good as it can be in lieu of the boss.
No, there's going to be that guy. There's going to be that guy on your team or in your squadron or in your workplace that he either just doesn't care or that's just the way he is, or whatever. And sometimes you're just not going to be able to change that. So again, go back to the individual level and focus on yourself. What can you control? You can't control his actions or the way he carries himself every day. And you can't control the words yep. that come out of his mouth and his attitude, but you can absolutely nope. control yours. So put a smile on your face and, you know, that old saying that says, kill him with kindness. Maybe something like that, man. Maybe that's a good approach. Just be the nicest guy ever to this dude. And if he's still a dick to you, well, you know what? He's just a dick. And you move on.
Yeah, well, fake it till you make it, right? Sometimes it's just putting on your best poker face and not showing yeah. any emotional reaction to it.
That's
and
it.
Just pushing through and not giving them the satisfaction of seeing you flinch at all. I can remember when I first got to Pacific Command, which is majority Navy. There were two guys, there were two cats in my division that were both Navy fighter pilot guys. One was a Hornet guy, Tomcat, then Hornet guy. The other guy was an EA6 guy. EA6 guy was money. He was really cool. We talked seed stuff all the time because he was a prowler
That's
guy.
He flew with a wizard.
Yeah. the other guy was the Tomcat guy had been a blue. He had been a blue angel. And I don't know. That dude played a life of comparison. For whatever reason, he didn't like me. He went out of his way to try to make fun of me. I remember one time I came back from leave and they had put these posters up, like these, they printed out pages like memes. Mm-hmm. They had like F-16s that were like, you know, had gone off the runway or stuff. And they had all these little funny sayings on them.
Yeah.
And I didn't say anything. I didn't flinch. Right. And I'll never forget my 06.
Satisfaction, right?
Yeah. No, fuck him, man. Right.
Like, yeah, exactly.
My 06 comes up to me. My boss, who's in Army 06, comes up to me like a week later. These things are still up. He comes up to me and I'm sitting in my cubicle and one of them is right just outside the door of my cubicle. Oddly. Right. And he points at me. He goes, Cass, have you seen this? And I go, yeah. And he goes, doesn't it bother you? And I go, no, I'm not a dumbass. I don't do that shit. Why would it bother me?
Yeah.
That's not me, you know?
Yeah.
And I'll never forget the look on his face. He just kind of went, oh, and then he ripped it down.
I got a funny story. Him, I got a funny story to tell on you. All right. When you grow up in a fighter community and you're not a fighter pilot by, you know, the color of wings you have on your chest, it can be challenging at times, right? And I'm
sure
there's a lot of us that are very comfortable in it. And I always have been, man. I'm very proud of what I accomplished in my career. I'm very proud of the path that I took. And I have no regrets. I was offered a chance to go to pilot training. And I turned it down because at the time of my life, that wasn't for me. All right. So I have no regrets. And I've been at the home of the single seat fighter pilot for going on 7 years now. Right. I'm the only Wizzo within about 300 miles. So you don't last that long at single seat fighter pilot base by having thin skin. Right. And a lot of these things, you just kind of let it roll off and you don't give them the satisfaction. All right. So here's the funny story. Do you remember when we went to the WESUP in Florida? We were at a 425th and I was the projo for that. And me and Ollie went down there as the admin team.
Yeah. I remember this.
And so we had all the vehicles and everything all set up and all this. Well, here comes Cass and Fuego. All right. And he and I have laughed about this story beyond this, so I don't mind name dropping him a little bit. So I go out there being the good projo that I am, and I pick up Cass and Fuego off the flight line, give you your beers, welcome to Tyndall. Let's go to the hotel room and get checked in. We're driving down the road. You're sitting right next to me in the passenger seat. He's in the back seat, and he starts with the Wizzo jokes. Hey, Roscoe, did you hear about the Wizzo that da-da-da-da-da-da? And he gets all the way through his spiel. And I looked out of the corner of my eye to you. And you were looking at the corner of the eye to me. And you kind of went like this. And I just looked at Fuego in the rearview mirror. And I said, you need new material. And we kept going. And that was the end of it. Right. So kind of going back to what the story that you were just saying, you don't give them the satisfaction. You just, all right.
No, you don't.
If that helps you with your ego boost for the day, I'm glad that I could be a part of that. You're welcome. And you move on with life.
Yeah, well, and what you may not realize is that Fuego and I had a conversation around that.
Behind before or after?
After.
After, okay.
Yeah, because, dude, he had just shown up. Like, he had been at the squadron for a week. He was my incoming director of operations. He wasn't the DO yet.
Yeah, he was kind of the new guy.
He was going to be the DO after we got back from that TDY. that WhatsApp, and I wanted her, and the interim DO did not want me to bring him because he wanted to make the whole show about him for that TDY.
Yeah.
And I told him, well, dude, I know that's how you feel, but sorry, like I need to get this guy integrated in the squadron. This is a great chance for him to learn, you know, and this is also a great opportunity for you to give him a really good handoff on what he's going to be doing when we get back. And so Fuego and I hadn't had much time to talk, but we ended up going out. I took him to dinner, like one of the first nights we were there. And that was one of the things that we had a little bit of a conversation around. So
that's funny. I'll wait offline and you can tell me the details of it. Cause that's kind of funny. Now I will say that, Fuego and I ended up having a really good relationship over the year.
Yeah,
or so
Fuego was a great dude.
And he was a great guy and he still is a great guy. Yeah, he's an 06 in charge of something somewhere. And, and he and I have had a lot of laughs over the years over that kind of stuff. We've seen each other. I saw him not too long ago. He came through the schoolhouse to get requalled. Cause, I want to say he was going to Shaw or something. I don't remember, but
I think he's I think he's the OG at Shaw right now.
He might be. Yeah. I know it's in 06. I don't know exactly what he's doing, but I ran into him in the parking lot. Actually, he spun up. I was leaving the building and he was driving down the road and he like slammed on his brakes, did a U-turn and came back, Roscoe. And we stood there in the parking lot for like 10 or 15 minutes, just BSing. So, anyway,
Fuego was a great deal. He did a great job.
Yeah. Yeah. He and I ended up doing some good work. At least I think we did some good work there and rewriting all the syllabi and all that kind of stuff.
So. Yeah, you guys did. I remember that. Yeah. Now that you mentioned that, I remember we were going through all the syllabi at that time. You guys did an awesome job.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, that's going on an hour of social anxiety and dudes you don't like. So you got anything to pile on here at the end as we get ready to wrap up our first thing Friday for December?
No, it just comes back to some of the, you know, there's themes in all of this, right? And at the end of the day, dude, whether it's social anxiety, not playing the comparison game or having to deal with somebody you don't like focus on you, deal with the situation, build a game plan, execute the game plan, figure out what you need to correct and go out and try it again.
Dude, I couldn't have said it better, man. I got nothing further. Be the one.
All right. Be the change, brother.